You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
In the last week or so, the performance of the developed world's economies and also the behaviour of the developed world central banks have come sharply into focus. Here to talk about what has happened and what might happen in the future is John Stopford, Head of Multi-Asset Income at 91 in London. It's been quite a time, John. What's your general summary before we get into semantics?
So I think the discussion amongst central banks is gradually shifting. So they've been singly focused on bringing inflation back to target. But as we get closer to target and given some deterioration in economic data, they're now beginning to have to weigh up the possibility that actually growth is being impacted by tighter policy and they may need to potentially cut significantly and soon to avoid the risk of leaving rates too tight for too long.
I think it all started with the Bank of Japan raising rates from 0.1% to 0.25%. Or was it the US Federal Reserve beforehand? I can't remember the sequence of events. But anyway, the Fed left rates unchanged, which surprised many. And then the Bank of England cut rates by 25 basis points. And if you look at it in meteorological terms, you would say, well, you've got high pressure in one area, low pressure in another. They're all going to come together and cause a big storm. And a big storm it caused.
Yeah, so I think, the Bank of Japan is clearly, doing something rather different from everyone else. So the rest of the world raised interest rates in response to higher inflation and the sort of post-pandemic boom and are now thinking about going the other way. Japan has kept rates at zero for a very, very long time and is finally getting to a point where it thinks there might be enough inflation to begin to normalize rates. So they're coming from opposite directions. And that's partly why markets reacted in the way they would. So Japan raised rates for the first time in God knows how many years. And a lot of people, particularly probably Japanese investors, have been funding themselves at close to zero in yen and investing that money overseas. And suddenly the yen started to respond to expectations of narrowing interest rate differentials. And there's a lot of money position the other way around, and the cutting of those positions just pushed the whole thing very fast in the direction of a stronger yen and falling markets where essentially Japanese investors and others have been putting their money. And so you saw a very large position unwind and squeeze, lots of people trying to get through the same door at the same time and struggling. So you saw a huge spike in volatility in some markets. But it is really a function of Japan really being out of step with the rest of the world. The rest of the world is more concerned, I think, that they may have kept interest rates too high for too long.
Talking about being out of step, do you think that the US Federal Reserve is out of step as well in not cutting when the data suggested that it might have been slightly bolder and cut by 25 basis points or even 50 basis points?
Well, I think the issue for the Federal Reserve is they've been behind the curve really for a number of years now. So they were very slow to raise rates initially, calling inflation transitory, which turned out to not be the case. Mm. Now they're worried about, will inflation come back? And I think to some extent they're fighting the last war. And so they've been slow to act in both directions. The risk to them now is we had some very soft labor market data, possibly distorted by Hurricane Beryl last Friday. But if it has some grains of truth, the US may have left policy too tight for too long, and they may end up having to cut more aggressively later this year to try and prevent the economy from sliding into either a deeper soft landing or a hard landing.
Yes, indeed. I mean, the employment data that came out, the non-farm payrolls data at 114,000 new jobs being created. At least they did create some jobs, but it was very disappointing to market participants. But also Germany showing signs of an economy, I don't know, that's not stagnating, but certainly not thriving at the moment. So it's everywhere. And there is a danger, of course, that the world goes into a recession, whether it's shallow or deep. Probably shallow, but nonetheless, a recession is on people's lips.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, market volatility and the unwinding of winning trades potentially adds to that risk because it creates some uncertainty in business and consumer sentiment. It potentially causes some losses to people's portfolios, which may impact how much they spend in the future, their sort of wealth and so on. So there's a sort of term I think George Soros coined about reflexivity, that there's a feedback loop. So economics affect markets, but markets also affect economics. And so you could end up in a situation where the data is already deteriorating or beginning to deteriorate, but the markets compound that by continuing to sell off. Clearly, we don't know whether that's going to happen. But, you know, this last week has maybe reminded people that they won't necessarily go up all the time and they won't necessarily go up in a straight line.
No, indeed. I mean, when you look at the graph of, for example, the S&P, or we have a look at the graph of the US 10-year bond, which I look at every day, it's not that dramatic a move that we've seen in capital markets and equity markets, but it's still caused some unease in market participants. It's not over yet. We've seen that. Everyone thought there might be a V-shaped recovery, as evidenced by the action on the Tuesday after the Monday. But now there's caution again. What do you think is going to happen now?
Well, I think we are probably in for a period of greater volatility. I mean, I think we are in an environment that is highly uncertain anyway, and we've obviously got additional sources of uncertainty in things like the US election, which looks as though it's going to be quite a tight result with quite different economic outcomes depending on who gets elected. And then you've got positions where there's probably still, you know, some damage that's been done to some portfolios that's going to come out of the woodwork in the near term. So, you know, these sort of volatility events don't tend to be, you know, quick and then done. They tend to have ripples. And so our sense is we could be in for a difficult month or so. It is typically not the best time of year for financial markets, typically August, September are some of the worst months. So you may get a bit of that sort of seasonal effect as well. And then if the data continues to move in the direction that last Friday pointed to, i.e. a harder landing, then that would be potentially pretty bad news for stock markets, not least because valuations going into this look quite stretched.
When you sit down with your multi-asset team at 91 in London, do you say to yourselves, we've seen this before, okay, it's not pleasant, but on the other hand, we're not going to change our strategy? Have you had a look at your portfolio and your positioning and said, maybe we should do this or that? What's been your approach?
Well, I think to some extent we're trying to anticipate. So some of our positioning has reflected the fact that equities looked somewhat stretched, particularly the sort of more cyclical and sort of tech-related parts of the market, that bonds were looking reasonable value, government bonds, and we're getting closer to a likely rate-cutting cycle. The question is, you know, how big that will be. Inflation's looking pretty well-behaved. Things like corporate bonds look relatively expensive. There's not much risk premium in. So we went into this relatively cautiously positioned. The question now is whether to, you know, take some counter positions to reflect the moves we've already seen, or to wait a bit and potentially add to some of the positions we've got to see whether this extends further. And I think in the short term, it's probably too early to try and go against some of the moves we've seen. If anything, we think it makes sense, for example, to add to US bond duration, where, you know, the chances are the Fed are going to be thinking about the need to potentially cut further and faster, and also potentially to continue to be cautious about some of the more cyclical parts of the equity market, which, as you say, haven't really corrected that far.
If the volatility stroke correction continues, do you think that the US Federal Reserve might indulge themselves in an interim rate cut, especially with the political background that is looming in November?
I think it's somewhat challenging. So the next meeting is in September, and I think if they can, they will wait, because they'll want to see a bit more data and get a sense of whether the data that came out at the beginning of this month was distorted by, for example, Hurricane Beryl. So is the underlying trend as bad as that appeared to suggest, or is it somewhat better? So if they can, I think they would wait. Also, to some extent, they don't want to be seen to be panicking. So they don't want to unsettle markets by appearing to react too heavily. So I think they'll try and avoid it. Obviously, if markets really start to tank, or we start to get bits of data that suggest things are deteriorating very quickly, then I think they may be forced to. But we would probably put, you know, a lower probability on that. We think the chances are, though, that they probably now wonder whether they should have eased at their last meeting, and so they might do a bigger cut at their next meeting, 50 basis points, essentially to reflect the fact that, you know, rates probably need to be a bit lower, a bit faster.
John, thanks so much for your analysis. John Stopford is head of multi-asset income at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.